OGL HD3 Philadelphia.
From the Piazza Premium Automobile Studios, powering your drive with 10 brands and 20 locations.
Always live on the free Odyssey app.
Kathy Barnett.
On Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
You can't stop me!
You are listening to The Kathy Barnett Show on the number one talk radio station in all of Philadelphia. As I tell you, I remind you guys all the time, the number one talk radio station in all of Philadelphia that crosses into most of the Mid-Atlantic. So we're talking about this is being heard in Pennsylvania, Maryland, New Jersey, Delaware. So hey to all of y'all, you are listening to me, Kathy Barnett, on The Kathy Barnett Show. And today, I was saying to the rabbi before we got started, I really don't want to be dramatic. It is within my nature to be a little extra when I'm very excited about something. And let me tell you, I could not put down his book, Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Jew? I didn't know what to expect when I started reading this. But Rabbi Raphael Shore, thank you so much for being on with me today. You are in Israel right now. But thank you so much for taking time out to be on the show. And thank you ever so much for writing this book. I thought I was going to be reading a book about why people hate the Jews. And what it turned into was a book about identity. My identity as a Black person, as a Christian, as someone who is looking for my purpose, someone who is earnestly seeking God for why I'm here. What's more important than that? And so I really cannot, without being overly dramatic, say how much I love this book, Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Jew by Rabbi Raphael Shore. Sir, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you very much for having me on your show, Kathy. It's a pleasure to be here, and what a nice introduction. And I'm excited. I'm excited because you got it. And when I'm writing the book, and it spent 4 years, it's very difficult, my first book.
Wow.
I'm a filmmaker. I've done 18 feature-length films, but this is my first book. And to know, are people going to get it? So you just satisfied me.
I mean, you know, so many places I can go. Just so you guys know, this is going to be a two-part series because there's just so much. And I'm going to try not to talk really fast to try to get it all in. But before we begin, we know that what is going on in the Middle East, where you are right now, you're in Israel. Can you give us an update on hostages that are being released? What is the peace deal? How are the people? Because we can all look at the politics of it all. We're paying attention to that. But how are the people?
It is a very difficult time in Israel right now, where the Jewish people and the Israeli army, we have won a military victory, but with a price that we have a hard time digesting. And Hamas, the evil Hamas Palestinian organization, they still have our captives. And the Jewish people, and it's something you got a taste of if you read the book, we have a very, very deep value of the love of life. And we're facing an enemy that does not share that. They have a deep value for the love of the afterlife. And therefore, they know they've got one over on us. When they have our hostages, we the Jewish people, are pretty much willing to do anything. And we're doing something really stupid right now. From a military point of view, from a strategic point of view, and this is why we had a little disagreement with Trump, because Trump would have sent a nuclear bomb on Gaza last Saturday because they didn't finish releasing all the hostages. And while Israel might have liked to do that, we can't because they've still got our hostages and we're not willing to give them up. And so today, these evil people returned 4 bodies, an 85-year-old, and 3 very young, 2 very young children, and a mother who they took captive and held them. We're not sure yet when they murdered them. And it's just horrific. They took captives as babies. This was a 9-month-old baby. And they put them into tunnels and dungeons and then murdered them. It's just unfathomable.
It's unthinkable. And I thought to myself, as I and the world was watching October 7th, October 8th, watching everything unfold, I thought to myself immediately, if we ever needed an example of what evil is, that was it.
That's
clearly
right.
Everyone is going to say, I got it. I understand now. But it was not. It was the opposite. Immediately, as we were watching young girls being dragged and reading stories about babies being placed in ovens or a young girl's breast being cut off and played around with like a volleyball, we're reading this as it's coming out. And people, there was like no pause, there was no break, very little sympathy. It went right into, we hate the Jews. And so again, I'm reading your book, and that is my initial question as I open up the pages, is why is there this unrelenting hatred for the Jewish people?
Right.
Why? Why do people hate the Jews? I know that's a big question.
That is the question. That is the question that the book takes on. And I think it's important to say prior to that, that again, it's when America had a 9/11, everybody understood ISIS and bin Laden are evil. When ISIS, in the form of Hamas, did the massacre of 1,200 Jews and took 250 people captives, the world lost moral clarity. And the question is why? It's the same evil ideology. It's basically the same people for the same purposes, except one time they attacked non-Jews and the world understood we have to fight this evil and destroy it. And that's what the world did, went out and destroyed ISIS and killed bin Laden. But when it comes to the Jews, when it comes to Israel and the Jewish people, all of a sudden people don't know what side they're on. And the universities in America are out there protesting against Israel, even the day before Israel launched a counterattack.
I mean, it was immediate. It was like October 7th, we're watching it. October 7th, by 10 p.m., the hatred and the vitriol. And it's like this enduring hatred that seems irrational. Although you make a rational case for Hitler, I want to get to that in a moment. But again, and so that's what we're going to be talking about, because there is this enduring sense of hatred. And I really started talking about Israel even more. I started bringing on different people to try to understand what in the world is going on. And when I read your book, it was like that, aha, because every single person I talked to, and I'm talking about people who I know to be good people. So these aren't crazy lunatic leftists that we see on college campuses. I would identify them as good people, Christians even. Pastors even. And when it came down to it, out of everyone I talked to, when I asked them, why do you not like the Jewish people? Your book summed it up in two issues. And I found that to be true. Do you want to tell the two issues?
I want to hear what you think to the two issues. Then I'll riff off of that. Tell me what the two things are, and then I'll riff off
good.
Of it.
It comes down, and I talked to a lot of people. I went to Israel for the first time for 9 days with a bunch of Black pastors. I was the only person who wasn't a pastor. I just really loved the Bible. I really loved studying it. I love studying history. And I found myself in the midst of all these people. I saw it there, like this whole replacement theology. It was just this profound sense of hatred or dislike or disdain for Jewish people. October 7th happens again. It's just people have lost their mind as I'm watching it. But I go out, I'm on college campuses, I'm asking the question, why? What's going on? And it really does come down to these two points that I'm going to do my best to kind of encapsulate, but you write about it beautifully here, is that one, it is this sense of prominence, prevalence. Jews are everywhere.
Right.
In every index of life, there's a Jew. Whether it's the banking industry, Wall Street, music, Hollywood, publishing, crypto, Jews are everywhere. And it's this sense of Jews are everywhere and they're taking over everything. And it reminded me of what the Egyptian king said, Pharaoh said, when all of the Joseph had passed. And he's like, Jews are everywhere. They're taking over. We need to get rid of them, mm-hmm. right? So it's like this enduring sense of Jews are everywhere.
Right. Impact.
That's what
impact.
I picked up from your book.
Impact.
The other one, well, one was prominence, prevalence, they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. But then secondly, and this is really just got me, was your influence. Without the Jews, I was saying to a very close family member who was also, because I asked, why do you not like the Jews? And I started explaining to them after I read your book, without the Jews, there's no Jesus. Without the Jews, there's no Western democracy. Without the Jews, there's no, you know, I believe we have in America, we have the greatest political document ever written, the U.S. Constitution. But the U.S. Constitution is founded upon Judeo-Christian values. And without the Jews, there are no Judeo-Christian values. And so it's your influence as well. So I'm going to pause. And okay, how did I do? Good. Did
you
I summed
did
it up?
Great.
Okay.
You did great. Yes. So first of all, it's so important to see, and you've got a great vantage point because I don't get to talk to those people who don't like the Jews. I'm living over here in Israel. I just see the whole world wondering what the heck's going on. You can have those private conversations. That's fascinating. But yes, I isolate the issue and I first challenge. The book is challenging conventional wisdom because conventional wisdom on anti-Semitism is that it's nothing unusual, that the hatred of the Jews is the same as the dislike of any other people or dislike. It's, you know, or they had to blame somebody for their problems, and that's why Hitler did World War II and the Holocaust, just because he needed a scapegoat. These are highly unsatisfactory answers by themselves, and in addition, they all contradict themselves. They hate us because we're rich. They hate us because we're poor. They hate us because we're too much like the population. They hate us because we're too different from the population. We're capitalists. We're communists. Every explanation has been given as a justification to hate the Jews, right. And they all contradict each other as well. So it can't be that there is no common root for the dislike of the Jewish people. And I say it with appreciation that a lot of people do like the Jews, and there's a lot of wonderful people out there who do like us, and we appreciate the support of a lot of Americans, especially who support the Jewish people in Israel. But I tried in this book to go deeper. And it is, like we said, it's almost supernatural. The reaction October 8th is supernatural. Like, what the heck is going on? Why give us a couple days where the world can empathize with the fact that we were just massacred by some barbarians who are the same as ISIS that you understood a day ago was really bad. So it's supernatural, and that's really where I go with this, that there's something spiritual and moral dimension to the hatred of the Jews. And you said it, there's two ways. The fact that the Jews have so deeply impacted humanity, and that even people on an everyday basis today, wherever they turn, the Jews seem to be prominent. So it gives the people a sense that there may be some, like Kanye, you know, that there's some conspiracy going on or something like that. Little does he know, we can't work out anything together. and the deeper reason actually comes from an understanding that the Jewish people were tasked by God to bring ideas into the world, a set of ideas into the world. And those ideas were powerful, transformational, good, but they were not going to be well received. And ultimately, Jew hatred, since the beginning of time, has been a reaction, a negative reaction against the impact that the Jewish people are having in the world.
I mean, you can keep going. I'm taking notes. I'm literally taking notes. No,
I could keep going, but you told me to be quiet.
I won't
speak for too long.
All right. Yes, I'm trying to keep it short. I have my producer in my ear telling me we're up against a break. So, guys, hold on. We're going to come back because I was writing down what you said, Rabbi. You said the Jews have been tasked to bring a set of ideas into the world. And some people aren't going to like those ideas. I want to pick that up when we come back on the other side of the break.
This is Talk Radio 1210, WPHT On Demand. On Demand.
Say, say, say.
VIP.
Wait, they don't love you, I love you.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Kathy Barnett Show. I have Rabbi Raphael Shore on with me right now. He is the author, among many things, he is also the author of Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Jew? If we have some time, I want you to tell me, how did you come up with that title?
It's a good subject.
It gets right to the point. And as we were coming out of, right before we went into the break, you were saying one of the reasons, I guess that you could sum it all up, a reason why people have an issue with the Jews is because Jews have been tasked to bring, I'm quoting what you said, Jews have been tasked to bring a set of ideas into the world. What are some of those ideas?
Yes, and that's why we're going to see, by the time we unpack all of this, we're going to see how the Jewish impact that we observe, the prominence as you described it, is tied completely to the same thing, as is the final analysis that this is not just a book about explaining anti-Semitism, but it's actually what life is about. This is a book about what life is about, and I'm so glad that you got that. The set of ideas that we, the Jewish people, were given by God at Mount Sinai 3,500 years ago said these ideas: love your neighbor as yourself, be a good person, don't murder, don't steal, work for human rights, make the world a better place, bring light and spirituality into the world. Elevate your existence. You're a body and a soul. A human being to this unique graft, a miraculous graft of physical animal world, but with a spiritual dimension, with a soul blown into us. And that creates a very difficult dynamic in life, in every human life, that we have to decide, are we going to become more of a spiritual being, or are we going to be more like our animal side, like the animal world? And the whole idea of the Jewish mission that we were given by God at Mount Sinai was bring these ideas to the world that we are more than animals, that we are spiritual beings, that we were created in God's image, and therefore we can rise to incredible spiritual heights with love and brotherhood, and we can bring a world to peace and with universal rights and education. These are the ideas that we were meant to bring into the world. And when we were told to bring that into the world, you know what happened?
What?
October 7th.
But why would
resistance.
People have a problem all throughout history? Because I started with, you know, Egypt, but, you know, we can go to Haman in Persia. We can go to Hitler. We can go and everything in between. We can go to Babylon. We can go to October 7th, straight to October 7th, which is in our generation. So we don't have to keep looking all the way back to Hitler any longer. We can just look right here in our generation. Why would people have a problem with the Ten Commandments?
People have a problem with the Ten Commandments because they might say they don't want God telling them what to do. They don't. Let me put it this way. There's a famous midrash in the Torah. I'll put on my rabbi hat for a moment. There's a famous midrash, which is a story with great meaning, that says when God gave the Torah to the Jewish people, he actually offered it to other people, every other people as well. And he brought it to one people, and they said, what's in it? That was their response. God says, I want to give you the Torah. I want to give you the Bible. I want to give you this book of instructions. It's not just instructions for living. It's moral principles of what you're going to have to do. Do this, don't do that. Moral principles. So the first nation says, what's in it? reasonable response, right? God says, don't murder. They said, we kind of like, that's kind of like part of our lifestyle. So I don't think so. Comes to another nation and he said, they say, what's in it? So God says, don't commit adultery. I don't know. No thanks. Another nations, don't steal. I don't know. That's kind of, that's what we do. And so the bottom line is that if we look around the world today, we don't see everybody running to accept these highest levels of behavior. We see that it's difficult. Let's put it in a nicer way. We see that it's difficult for humanity to not steal, to not commit adultery, to not rebel against God. So this is the body-soul conflict that exists in every human life, every human being with free will. This is the core of free will. You have a pull that wants to steal. We have part of us that wants to do whatever we feel like. And then God came to the Jewish people and he said, you want this book? And the Jewish people did not say, what's in it? We said, we will do it. Whatever's in it, we will do it. And God says, wow, who revealed my secret? The secret was that the Jewish people understood if God asked for it, it's going to be difficult, but we'll do it because what could be more meaningful? But it's a battle. So when the Jewish people accepted to bring these ideas into the world, we understood when Abraham was chosen even before Mount Sinai, when God picked Abraham, he told Abraham, your children are going to go spend a couple hundred years in Egypt as slaves. And after that, you're going to be in exile for thousands of years. This was not a secret in Jewish history. We understood this was part of the package. And to answer your question is that there is this, because we are body and soul, because we are animal and spirit, every human being and throughout human history, this is the story that there is resistance to becoming our best selves and becoming elevated humanity that we could possibly be. And the Jews, unfortunately, are that thorn in the side that keeps reminding us, we got to go higher. We got to go higher. We got to do more. We got to do better.
But isn't that exhausting? I mean, just listening to, and knowing the history of the Jewish people, of, you know, what you've endured. Again, this isn't just yesterday that the Jews have been enduring suffering. It's almost like an indestructible people. I think that's your word. I can't even remember now what you said and what I'm thinking, because I've embraced it so much so. But it's wouldn't that be exhausting? I mean, you know, having your people go through what Hitler put you through, having to go through October 7th, having to go through Haman and the gallows, having to go through Egypt and making bricks without straw. I mean, instead, what I see is, and this is what I want to get to when we come back on the other side of the break, is this sense of identity. This is where the link to me was, is that as I'm reading your book, as I'm remembering history, looking at my maps of history, I see that this is what has happened. And yet, and I see, you know, especially when I'm thinking about being Black, I mean, one, I think this is something, a point that you made, is that people not only dislike the Jews, but they fear the Jews. They fear the implication of this sense of moral being. And I was like, well, why would they fear that? Because as I was thinking and linking it to identity, is that you're not just a Jew on Shabbat. Like most Christians are Christians on Sunday, and then we live like hell the rest of the week.
That's the answer. But that's the answer to the question that you just asked me. Do you see how that connects? In other words, most people don't want to be on that high level of moral responsibility and spiritual awareness 7 days a week, 24/7. It's a high demand. We want to relax. And so the idea that we're being pushed to do it, the Jewish people are in essence saying, no, you got to do more. You got to be 24/7. And
but wouldn't that get exhausting? So what drives you though? Because you're human too. Like, how many rules do you guys have? Like, how many laws do you have?
There's 613 commandments.
Exactly right. And the one that asked me not to forsake the assembly of myself, meaning go to church, Kathy. You know, like I'm waking up like, oh my God, I'm so tired. I don't know if I want to do that. You guys have like what, 600 and what?
613. And so when somebody comes to the Jewish people and says, you know what, I'm impressed by how you guys live. I'm impressed by your society. I would like to become Jewish. I want to become a convert. The first thing we say to them is, are you out of your mind? Because it's exhausting, exactly what you just said. Are you sure you're going to be persecuted? People aren't going to like you like they do now. And more importantly, right now you've got seven mitzvahs. You've got seven commandments. You can go to heaven. Judaism says you don't have to be Jewish to go to heaven. Just be a righteous person. And your bar is here. You have seven commandments. Do those and you're good. You're good. Why do you get want? Why do you want 613?
So I tell you no lie. I thought about that. I did go as far as to look at all the holidays this year, and I put it in my phone in my calendar. So I'm gonna, because I got to the other end of me reading your book, and I don't even know. Like, we were created with consciousness. Jews were created with sense of consciousness. And even in the Christian, in the New Testament, you know, we know the word of God teaches us that we did not know there was sin until those Ten Commandments came out. We didn't know that, you know, adultery was a sin until we became aware of it, until we gained a consciousness of these things. And again, this is what the Jews brought into society, into the world. You brought humanity to the human race, that everything is not permissible. A lot of things may be permissible, but everything is not good. And it's not, and it doesn't create a sense of purpose. And that purpose being creating such a space to where God can dwell and live outwardly through you and around you. Is that in a nutshell?
In a nutshell.
What the Jews believe?
In a nutshell, we're all supposed to build a spiritual temple in our hearts. Every human being is supposed to become a spiritual being. And if we all do that, if we all elevate ourselves by being moral and by connecting to real purpose and deep meaning in life, then each of us will be a loving, beautiful human being. And together, we create a society and a space that God dwells in as well. And this is the idea of the Jewish temple. The Jewish temple, it says, when the Jewish people built a temple in Jerusalem, it says, when we have a temple, God dwells in us. It doesn't say God dwells in the temple. He dwells in our hearts. Yeah. So we are trying to, humanity is, the vision of humanity is to create a society where all of humanity is living an elevated, beautiful, meaningful, moral life, spiritual life, where we all love each other and we connect to the higher purpose of life in God. And if we do that, God's presence will dwell amongst all of us.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, Rabbi, I want to talk about what Hitler called the Jewish problem. Let's get back to that. I will see you guys on the other side of this break.
Thanks for listening to Talk Radio 1210 WPHT On Demand.
They try to shut us down and it ain't gonna slide. Only thing I fear is God and he on my side. That's the confidence.
Whew, we are in the deep end, Rabbi, at this point. And, you know, and I have to just say, because I have thought about it, in the culture in which we're living in, we're not supposed to be asking these questions or having this frank of a conversation. We've created an environment where we don't have meaningful conversation so that we can understand, so that we can learn. And I recognize that. And yet I often throw caution to the wind. I am not going to be bullied into silence. I think this is the conversation we should be having, because there are a number of very prominent, quote unquote, conservatives who come to what you write about in the book, Rabbi, the Israel test, and say, okay, one, I do recognize Jews are everywhere. They are prominent. They are in every index of society, and they're doing well for the most part. And two, they are very influential, their way of life, what they bring to the table, their value set. They are very influential. Every one of us comes to the Israel test that the rabbi talks about. And the only difference between me and some of these other people is how I feel about it, what I think about it. Do I have admiration and appreciation? And I do. And it's almost unnatural. The moment I gave my life to the Lord when I was 19 years old, I was so excited about Jesus. Love him. And I went to an airport and I was talking to a young man who is Jewish. I think he was like 18 and 19 also. And we just started talking. And I don't know what you call it, Rabbi, but he was one of the young men in America who was going to spend a year with the military, with the IDF. And so we just started talking and I found out he was a Jew. And I mean, for the first time, that's my first time ever knowingly talking to someone who was Jewish. And I just had an immediate love. Mm-hmm. It was just a love and an appreciation. One, because Jesus is a Jew. Mm-hmm. And recognizing that without the Jewish people, I wouldn't have Jesus. But then, of course, over the years from 18 to today, of just understanding the history of the Jewish people, the flow of history, and then coming to this place of saying, I see what everyone else sees. I see that the Jewish people are very prominent, very prevalent in a lot of different indexes of life. I also see, especially after reading your book, I see the influence as well to a much deeper, with a much deeper sense of it. And I come to both of those and I say, thank you, God. You describe it as God needing to create an indestructible people who would last throughout all generations, carrying these values from one generation to the next generation to the next generation, indestructible. That would certainly be the Jewish people.
Yeah, and you talked about it, like, isn't this exhausting? And that's why I think the best way to frame the Jewish people is with the resilient people. You know, we got the reputation of being the startup nation. A great book was written on how innovative we are in Israel. But we're the resilient people. And this has just been going with us. And we still love life. When you come to Israel now, we're in the middle of a war. You'll see people still celebrating the holidays and celebrating life. It's alive, and you just can't keep us down. The love of life, the joy is still here, even amongst the tragedy. And part of it is because we have a mission and we have a purpose and we have meaning in life. Now, I want to say something really important. It's not that every Jew, there's a lot of Jews who don't even know what our purpose is. And that's the real reason. My main reason, I'll say it that way, why I wrote my book, Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Jew, is because I want the Jewish people to understand who they are. And you can understand who they are through the lens of anti-Semitism. So we can get a lot of clarity. It's provocative. It's interesting. I also want non-Jews to understand it as well and understand who the Jews are, because we have so many mixed emotions about it. But even when the Jews are not religious or not knowledgeable about the mission, they're still driven. They still have that DNA that was put into them from being a descendant of Abraham, and then being part of a Jewish people that was given Torah at Mount Sinai. It impacted our DNA in a spiritual way, and it created a drive in the Jewish people that is just insatiable. So whether we're driven for spirituality or even if we're not, and we get distracted, Jews will create communism. They'll create all kinds of good things and bad things. And so we're not all great specimens of humanity. We're more immoral on an individual level than even other people. But on the whole, the Jewish people are just pushing. They're just driven. And it's in this innate spiritual DNA that we've got that Hitler identified as the reason why he had to wipe all of us out.
The Jewish problem. What is it? So what did Hitler know? Because the way you characterize Hitler is not a way I would have characterized him and is not a way that most people have characterized him. I remember, again, being in my early 20s and watching every documentary I could find on Hitler and his maltreatment of the Jewish people. And again, it was just so solidifying, like, this is evil. This is wrong. But then you talk to me about Hitler.
Right. Yeah. So first of all, I do not in any way want to create an idea that Hitler was not evil. Hitler was as evil as it gets. He was total evil. And that's one of the points in my book is, why is it that in every generation, when evil comes to the world, it finds the Jews? You see, there's something very profound there, that evil always finds the Jews, right? We're never irrelevant. We're always relevant, whether it's our impact and our prominence and our success, or whether it's the hatred for us. It is always relevant. Adolf Hitler looked at the world, and what is unique about my presentation here is that I show his ideology. In the same way that I've made many films about the radical Islamic ideology. In other words, evil people are usually not motivated by simple being a horrible, evil person. They usually don't even think they're evil people. They usually think they're good people. So just like the radical Islamists are thinking that they're creating a better world by doing all the destruction, Adolf Hitler also had an ideology that he was helping humanity by carrying out his plan. His plan, he looked at the world and he said, there's two ways. I'm going to try to say this in 60 seconds, or it might take me 90.
Okay.
He said, there's two possible ways that people can look at the world. And this connects to what I said at the beginning. Are we part of the physical animal world, or are we part of the spiritual world? Are we human beings with a divine spirit? If we are part of the animal world, so there's laws that govern life, which is called survival of the fittest. Darwin identified it, natural selection. Natural selection means that might makes right, and we conquer the weak. And as a result of one animal killing the other and conquering the other and not having mercy on the weak ones, the species adapt, evolve, and modify and become greater, and it creates a greater animal world. If humanity is also an animal, part of the natural world, then that should be the rules that govern the world. And this was an ideology called social Darwinism that was very prominent, very prevalent in the last half of the 19th century in Europe, and Hitler just picked up on it. But then if you believe that, then there's another ideology which is at odds, which contradicts that ideology, and that is the idea that humanity is not an animal, that humanity is more, and therefore we want peace on earth, brotherhood of all mankind. Let's help the weak. Let's help the poor. Let's have universal human rights. Because if that would happen, if there's then according to Hitler and according to social Darwin, that would be the destruction of humanity. Because humanity is not going to grow through evolution and through strength. By natural selection. You're taking out the filter of natural selection. So Hitler looks at the world in the 20th century and he says to himself, who's winning? Which value system is successful and dominating the world? And he sees democracy, like you said at the beginning. He sees liberal democracy and people through Christian values behaving with love your neighbor and peace on earth as the core values of humanity and the Ten Commandments. And he says, oh, man, we're in trouble. Humanity is going to hell. We're going to have to fix this. So Hitler says, I need to destroy that ideology. I'm going to destroy the church. I'm going to destroy the communists. And I'm going to destroy the source of it all, the Jewish people.
You know, I was thinking as I was reading your book, the book again is Who's Afraid of the Big Bad Jew by Rabbi Raphael Shore. And as I was reading your book, I was thinking about, okay, because you made this kind of, you know, historical timeline of, yes, eventually the hatred of Hitler would have arrived at the doorsteps of Christians. But initially it was, you know, all focus, intense focus was on the Jewish people. And I was thinking, that made me recall, you know, during COVID here in America, you know, there were a lot of, the state said, you can't go to church. And a lot of Christians did not go to church. The state said, you know, what you can, you know, in Canada, if you go outside and you preach any part of the Bible, you can go to jail. And people look at that and they say, okay, well, I'm in fear of the consequences of the state. So I am going to kowtow down and I'm going to do as I'm told. And so eventually, I believe you may have said this in your book. I don't know if it came from me or from you at this point, but I think you said it in your book, is that most of these, you know, let me just sum it up. And here it is, that you can't beat the Jewish identity out of a Jew. It is so intricately woven into every fiber of your DNA. Trying to stop a Jew from being a Jew is like someone telling me, stop looking like a Black person. I can't. I could do a Michael Jackson, but that's going to look really weird. And I don't want to do that, right? But it's like, it's that kind of, it's so rooted in you. And so whereas people like a Hitler may tolerate the church, but they believe that to some degree they can dilute the values of the church, of the Christian church, whereas they will not be able to dilute the values of the observant Jew, because again, it is so woven in you, and that makes you a threat, because you will, and what really solidified this for me, I went to Israel, like I said earlier on, and I got a chance to meet, there's 12 tribes of Israel, 10 of those tribes were dispersed and they were driven off into different parts of the world. But now you have a number of these tribes that are reemerging. Do you call it Aliyah? Is that how you pronounce it?
Aliyah. They're making Aliyah.
Yeah, where they're making Aliyah. And so I got to meet a group of Ethiopians who had made the Aliyah, and I met a group of Indians.
Right. Black Jews, Indian Jews. We have Jews of every color who and shape Jews. And size.
What was interesting, though, and what is, again, God had to make an indestructible group of people who would weather the test of time, because this Indian Jew was saying that his people, they had been, you know, dispersed from Israel, and now hundreds of years, thousands of years, they're living as Indians. But then some random person happened to come to their little tribe, and they saw that these Indians, who did not know they were Jewish, were practicing Shabbat. And they, and this random individual who stumbled upon this Indian group said, oh, you're Jewish. And they was like, Jewish? What do you mean we're Jewish? This is just what has been passed down from generation to generation to generation, that we practice. Now, they didn't know it was Shabbat, but they were practicing Shabbat.
Right.
And again, it's like you can't beat the identity out of a Jew. They are, it is intertwined. And again, it looks very other to me. I would call it very spiritual.
Right. And every Jew, many Jews don't even know this about themselves, which is really fascinating. But that's why Hitler said, the church, I just need to destroy the institution. But the Christians, they'll stop doing Christianity and it'll be all right. And the Bolsheviks, the communists, they'll stop doing communism. They'll stop with the humanitarian values. But the Jewish people, Hitler said, and all this that I'm describing his ideology was his words. And that's what I show in the book. He said the Jews, it's inside their spiritual DNA. So even if they don't, even if they never studied the Torah, even if they don't know about what it means to be Jewish, even if they're out there far away in India, they're still that have that drive to somehow make the world a better place, to somewhere I'll accomplish more, to be connected more. And therefore, we've become the indestructible people. And that's the thing that Hitler didn't understand.
Yes.
And here we are. And that's why I'm so optimistic, because we come back and we're still here. We're still back in Israel, back in our homeland.
You're still here. You're still here after all these generations later. Guys, I'm going to have to put a pause right here. This is part one of me talking to Rabbi Raphael Shore. Join me next week. We'll start with part two. Blessings. You've been listening to The Kathy Barnett Show.